Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
An insider's look at the National Football League.
That's a W. How many people want to eat a W tonight?
Time for NFL Lunch.
Cooked you a turducken. There it is.
He's probably a Popeye's biscuit away from being a tight end.
Sponsored by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse with Vinny and Haney on Sports Radio. 105.7 The Fan.
Ravens and Colts about to get it on here in a matter of minutes. One winning drive, joint practice between the two teams. Ravens and Indy will start the preseason officially Thursday night. M&T Bank Stadium, Ravens high expectations. Colts trying to figure out what their quarterback situation is going to be. Is it going to be Daniel Jones? Is it going to be Anthony Richardson? Because you look at the roster, they've got some workable pieces in Indianapolis, but can they get their QB situation straightened out enough to make a run at Houston in the AFC South? But that's an Indianapolis thing. Not a Baltimore thing. Speaking of Baltimore, Rashad Bateman back at practice today. So is Lamar Jackson. Lamar, as a matter of fact, going to meet with the media later on this afternoon after the practice against Indianapolis. But Patrick Ricard is still very much part of the Ravens series. Signed a contract extension. And Ricard talks about the value of these joint practices.
Yeah, as a vet who may or may not play in games, I think the joint practices they're important. I think it gives you game-like reps. You're going against somebody else. You can really hit them. You can really finish it. Blocks, catches, tackling. Not maybe bring it to the ground, but... And it's fun, too. You're not just going against the same guys every day. You know, you're going against different competition, and, you know, you may play that team in the regular season or playoffs. So I think it's really important, and also for young guys, too, to kind of get those reps before they play in a game. I think that's also crucial for them because those are also the same guys they're going to go against. So... I like doing it. I think it's cool. I'm happy we have one tomorrow. So,
and Patrick Ricard said it perfectly. This is for us, the guys who probably aren't going to play in preseason games. Only three of them now. So Patrick Ricard, there's no need for him or for the starters to be involved in the preseason. So this is how he gets his work in. Then you get your good work in a couple weeks later when you take on the Washington Commanders as they're looking at big hopes. And we'll talk about their problems right now. Terry McLaurin, bottom of the hour with Jeffrey Chedia. So, yeah, the joint practices, Nolan, I'm cool with it. It's in pads, and it's as close to a real game as they're going to come until they go to Buffalo on September the 7th.
Right, and it's not surprising that a veteran player like Pat Ricard would be all about it. You know, these guys want to play. You know, I mean, they're this is their livelihood. They're ball players. They're professionals. They want to play. So while preseason games are not the most exciting, and I think even veteran players would admit that there isn't a ton of value in them getting reps in those games, they still want to play. And you get sick probably very quickly of going up against your own guys. I mean, I've never been in that situation, but I'd imagine it probably gets old after probably just 2 or 3 days, let alone a couple weeks. So I'm all about adding more of these. I think the future of the NFL is just doing away with the preseason in general and going all, you know, joint practices. And heck, make it a week-long thing. You know, the Ravens are doing one with the Commanders in a couple more weeks, and it's going to be down in their neck of the woods. But what's stopping you from, I don't know, even traveling a little bit? You right. know, going West Coast and getting funky, you know, I mean, spend a week out there and do 3 or 4 practices. I mean, I think there's a lot of untapped potential here.
And once the NFL eventually goes to the 18-game regular season, that at very least trims another preseason game off the schedule here. And we like to watch football because it's football, but let's be honest, preseason, it's, you know, you watch it. Like tomorrow, the Orioles are, or Thursday rather, the Orioles aren't playing. So it gives you something to peruse outside of watching some, you know, pennant race baseball, which I'll be trying to watch both.
Right.
I can't, I have two eyes. I can multitask.
Well, you got to watch the Ravens preseason games because we want to know coming in the next day who's going to be the guy that all the callers are obsessed with.
Right.
Who's that undrafted wide receiver that you've never heard of before but is somehow going to be a future Hall of Famer?
And then you'll forget who it was just 2 weeks later. Patrick Ricard. Now, you get to let off some steam against a team in another jersey color. So, you know, get a little physical there. How do you try to avoid the inevitable fights, though, Patrick Ricard?
I think it's pretty hard. You know, we're in training camp, especially guys are they're fighting for their jobs or livelihoods. And it's a big evaluation for us. You know, we're going against another team who their scouts are looking at us and vice versa, and things kind of got chippy. Getting chippy, you don't really know the guy, so you might, you know, tempers flare, it might happen. I think the last time we had a joint practice against the Colts, we had a full team brawl. And so hopefully that doesn't happen again because it got a little crazy out there.
Yeah, I don't really know you, but I'm going to have to punch somebody. And unfortunately, you're the guy wearing a horseshoe. Wearing your helmet, so you're gonna have to feel the pain. But the last thing John Harbaugh, Shane Steichen want is for this team to escalate to where that's gonna be what we're watching on NFL Network tomorrow. Hey, and Owings Mills, full scale brawl between the Colts and the Ravens here. Look at how crazy things got.
Right, and to be honest, I wouldn't mind seeing a little pushing and shoving and chippiness. You know, say a Ravens O lineman against the. A Colts pass rusher or something. Things get a little maybe late towards the whistle and guys let off some steam or corners and wide receivers going at it, grabbing each other. I have no problem with that. Last thing you want to see, though, is like an Aaron Donald situation where he takes his helmet off and starts swinging it.
Yeah.
I mean, that it can get out of hand quick.
It's NFL lunch. Bob Haney, Nolan McGraw, and he's out of one winning drive with the Ravens. Patrick Ricard talks about Derrick Henry and just watching him just to beat you in submission if you're a defensive player.
It depends, I think, on the guy. If it's a DB or someone, they're definitely backing up a little bit. Or if it's a linebacker who's been in all game and if we're up by a lot, they might kind of cower down a little bit. But I don't think so. I think they're still playing. They're still trying to win. Yeah, it's a lot of fun whenever we have a lead and we're running the ball and they know we're running the ball. Especially with Derek, like he's so big and fast that I have to make sure that I'm gonna sprint, get my block of his, because if I don't, he's gonna run me over. So like it's a challenge for myself too.
That guy, as the game progresses and he just pounds and pounds and pounds. I mean, even the most brutal safety. It just gets, it wears on him. And now, as we've seen in the highlight film with Derrick Henry throughout his career, he can one-punch KO. I mean, who was it? Josh Norman, I believe it was. I mean, that was the stiff arm of all stiff arms.
Earl Thomas?
I mean, it's, you know, for 40 yards. Get out of my way. Get out of my way. He carried Marcus Williams over in London, but he was with one arm. But you get the point. So he might be able to get you on that one big hit, but as he gets lathered up, 15, 16, 20 carries, teams are very reluctant to get in the way of this dude when he's got a head of steam rolling here.
And it's one of those things, he comes to the Ravens and you're excited, obviously, because the Ravens got a good player. But he, at least speaking for me, was one of the most feared guys for me as a fan. Like when the Ravens were playing the Titans, especially after what happened in the playoffs in 2019, I wanted no parts of Derrick Henry. And then when they met in the playoffs the next year, I was scared, even though the Ravens defense actually did a great job against him. Until the final whistle sounded in that game, I wanted no parts of Derrick Henry because it was a close game and they had held him in check, probably averaging somewhere around 3 yards a carry. One of the better defensive performances against him I've ever seen. But even still, in a close game, it got to the fourth quarter. I'm like, he hasn't done anything all day. You know he's going to get one. There's no way he's going to go a whole game without busting one. So it's always in the back of your head. If you're an opposing defense, all right, we got this guy. We're shutting down the run. We're shutting it down. Until that final whistle, you haven't shut anything down.
And as we wrap up NFL lunch, the regular season of 2020, overtime game, where they, for the most part, did a good job, to your point, of containing him. And then in overtime, he had, what, like a 50-yard run, the walk-off. Walk-off touchdown run, Derek Wolfe, right? He's the one that used to bench press Grizzly Bears or whatever it was. He played a great game. He just eventually wore the Ravens down, and that was all she wrote.
Derek Wolfe, actually the unsung hero of that playoff game I was talking about, 2020. there was a moment there where it looked like Henry was finally going to get his, where he was going to bust it, and Derek Wolf with just an errant arm, all by himself, no help, stuck his right arm out or left arm out, brought him down or tripped him up just enough. He was gone if he didn't get that arm in there.
We'll come back. Shift to baseball. American League East report. What happened in the division last night? What's going on today? Updated look at the standings as we're in the first week of August. And we'll talk some NFL. Jeffrey Chedia, NFL.com. The AFC West, it's Kansas City's to lose. But could this be the year, finally, that somebody gets over that Chiefs hump? And three holdouts or hold-ins of note going on in the NFL. We'll get Jeffrey's thoughts on those.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yankees, Boston, Toronto.
A closer look at the AL East with Vinny and Haney. 105.7 The Fan.
Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan here on this Turn It Up Tuesday. Last night, Orioles get clobbered by the Phillies. Birds actually led this game 3-1. And then we all saw how it turned out. Kyle Schwarber, 2 homers, 6 ribbies. Philadelphia hit 6 homers on the night. Bullpen for the Orioles did not do well. Jordan Westberg, Tyler O'Neill went deep for the Orioles. Cade Povich got 5 2/3. Not enough, however, and that was all she wrote. Grayson Rodriguez, we talked about this. Going to get the bone chips cleaned out of the right elbow, so we'll see him hopefully at spring training, but not counting on him much. I wouldn't. For next year, Dean Kramer tonight, 8-7 with a 4.27. Juan Walker, 3-5 with a 3.82 for Philadelphia. That's coming up at 6:45 BBT at 5:30 tonight. Brought to you by Jerry's Home Services, Tim Barbalays, and Oriole Hall of Famer Mike Bordick. Getting you ready for that fun action in the division last night. Boston Red Sox, they're hot. They're in fuego. They're playing good. And last night, the Kansas City Royals. Remember the Royals last year? Beat the Orioles, made a run into the playoffs. Supposed to be there next year. They've had some injury problems. But last night, Boston Red Sox, hey, man, we're not worried about what you did in 24. How about feeling what we're doing right now in 25?
High fly, dead away center field. Isabel turning. She's gone. Jarren Duran crushing one to center.
Nestled on the call, wasn't Jarren Duran subject to trade rumors? 3-run homer for the Red Sox. Rob Refsnyder hit a 2-run shot, or drove in 2 runs, I should say. Brian Bello, he went 6 strong. He missed the start of the season with an injury. He's now 8-5 on the year. The Boston Red Sox have won 6 in a row. They passed the Yankees in the standings, which we'll get to here in a second. Speaking of the Yankees, they were taking on the Texas Rangers last night, and things went extras. And in the end, it was Heartbreak City for New York.
And there's a swing and a fly ball deep out to left. That one is gone! Josh Young did it! Well, you pick your poison, and Josh Young makes him pay.
Yeah, Rangers Sportsnet on the call. Jock Peterson hit a homer in the ninth to tie it. Sent it in extras off Devin Williams. And then Josh Young, as you heard, 3-run shot. Jake Bird, who got sent back to the minors today. Boy, short leash there in New York, right? But 8-5 was the final score. Stanton and Goldschmidt went deep in a losing effort for the New York Ball Club. Winning pitcher for the Texas Rangers last night, Danny Cullo. Remember him? Remember that guy whose arm was going to fall off? Our pets' heads are falling. Anyway, Toronto taking on the Rockies and the first place Blue Jays. They puffy pants Colorado.
And now Bo Bichette rips one. Center field and deep. Going back, Doyle at the wall. It is out of here. Another home run in this game for Bo Bichette. A 3-run blast, and it's 13-1 for the Blue Jays in the seventh.
Sportsnet on the call. Bo Bichette, 2 jacks, 6 ribbies. Dalton Varsho He hit a home run. He drove in four. He's had some injury problems, but he's back, ready to rock and roll. 15-1 was the final score. The Blue Jays, 8-for-15 with runners in scoring position. Eric Lauer picked up the win. He's now 7-2 on the season. Tampa Bay Rays, they were the little team that could for a while. They're starting to fade. They were cleaning. Now they got injuries on top of it. And the Angels made them pay.
And there's a fly ball to left, hit pretty well. Out forward is Mangum near the wall. That is gone. Joe Adell into the Angels' bullpen. First homer by righty off Hauser this year, and it's 2-1.
FanDuel Sports on the call. 5-1. Final score. Joe Adell's had a big old year here. Former top prospect, struggled a little bit. But he jacks one, two-run shot. Ward had two ribbies. Cuckoo Kikuchi went six strong for his fifth win of the year. Seven strikeouts as the Angels handle the Tampa Bay Rays last night. Today's schedule, Kansas City at Fenway, 7:10. New York again at Texas, that is 8:05. Toronto at Colorado, 8:40. And again out west, it is Tampa taking on the Angels. Let's see. Toronto, three games up on the Red Sox now in the American League East. Yankees lost four in a row. They've fallen 5.5 off the pace. Tampa and Baltimore keep dreaming. Detroit, 8 games up on Cleveland. This was, what, a 14-15 game lead at one point for the Tigers, but still comfortable lead in said division. KC's 9.5 out. Out west, Houston, they're 3 games up on Seattle. Texas, 4.5 out. Out in the National League East, Phillies back up on the Mets, 1.5. Miami poking around 500, 8.5 off the pace there. Brewers, 3 games up on the Cubs. And Milwaukee has won 4 in a row, playing really good baseball in the Central. And then the Dodgers, they're 3 games up on San Diego, 9 up on the Giants. And you talk about the Brewers real quick. Their culture of winning has kind of been there. Council's left. Murphy's taken over. They're going to the playoffs yet again. They've traded away players, but yet they still maintain this level of success. So the Milwaukee Brewers, the feel-good story in the NL Central. Cubs aren't out of it, but Milwaukee, this was a year maybe the Cardinals could catch up to them. Not happening. Wild cards, if the playoffs started today, American League, Boston, New York, and Seattle. Texas, 1.5 there. Cleveland, only 2.5 out. KC's 4. Angels are 5. And then in the National League, Cubs, Mets, Padres. Reds are 3 back. Cardinals 5.5. And everyone else got some work to do. That is your standings update here on this Turn It Up Tuesday. We'll come back, talk some NFL. Jeffrey Chedia, NFL.com. 3 major hold-ins going on in the NFL right off the top of the head. We'll talk about those. And what about Kansas City's perch? Is it still strong on top of the AFC West, or the Chargers or the Broncos coming to get them?
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ravens open their season in Buffalo, September the 7th. From NFL.com, he's on the Window Nation guest hotline. Let's welcome back to the show, Jeffrey Chedia. Jeffrey, good afternoon. How are you feeling today?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I cannot complain, Jeffrey. Appreciate the time. Now, in this division, Cincinnati Bengals, back-to-back playoff-less season. Zach Taylor said Burrow and other big stars are going to play in the preseason opener. What is your philosophy on that? I mean, Andy Reid does it, but, you know, Sean McVay, I guess, started the trend. Harbs is kind of on board with McVay. What about Zach Taylor going with his starters at least early in the preseason?
I think for them it makes a ton of sense because they have historically been a slow starting team under Zach Taylor, and they can't afford to have that happen again. You saw what happened last season. How, you know, opening up was a 1-4 where they just could not make up that ground down the stretch. And being in that kind of hole, you know, when you're playing in a tough division and a tough conference and there's so much competition to get playoff spots, like, they have to find a way to make that happen. And to be honest, I mean, it's not just Joe Burrows and Jamar Chases, but they've got a lot of new faces on defense. Trey Hendrickson hadn't been around all offseason. But no, I think that they've got a lot of work to do and a lot of questions to answer. And so playing guys in the preseason would definitely help them figure some of that stuff out.
Now, as the Colts are in town, and, you know, they're going to be chasing Houston like everyone else, it seems, in the AFC South. How do you see this quarterback battle playing out with Daniel Jones and Anthony Richardson?
You know, I'll be honest, I'm kind of on Team Jones right now, and that's only because Anthony Richardson has been so inconsistent and injury-prone, and when you think about Shane Steichen going into his third season, obviously they lost their owner in the offseason and dying. I think there's a lot of questions about stability, and I think you want to make sure you're going with the most stable choice. And that's not always the most risky choice. And so it feels as if Daniel Jones, if he's able to go in there and be competitive and be consistent, he's had his injuries and he's had his inconsistencies, but we've seen this before with Geno Smith and Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold. Sometimes a change of scenery can help a veteran quarterback, and I imagine that that's what Daniel Jones has going for him.
Jeffrey, let's talk about a couple of hold-ins at camp so far. And Terry McLaurin, Micah Parsons, James Cook, you know, come to mind. You know, just on the outside looking in, McLaurin and Cook, you know, they want new deals and they certainly want to get this done, but they seem to be cool, if you will, with the organizations. Micah Parsons, however, maybe not so much with Jerry Jones. Can the Micah Parsons, where he's requested a trade, can this thing get uglier than it already is in Dallas?
I don't think it will. And I know Jerry Jones' history of signing star players, and rarely. It may take some time. It may get dramatic, which I don't think he minds the attention, to be honest with you. But at the end of the day, he ends up paying his guys. He did it with Zach. I mean, excuse me, with Dak, with CeeDee Lamb, Zeke Elliott, Zach Martin went through it a couple years ago. And Micah Parsons is probably the best player in that group. And so I doubt that Jerry Jones is sitting here saying, I'm going to play hardball with this guy. It will not surprise me if, come September, Micah Parsons is the highest paid non-quarterback in the league. The other guys that you mentioned, I think, have different circumstances, with James Cook being a running back, Terry McLaurin's an older player like Trey Hendrickson. And so I understand those circumstances, but when it comes to Dallas, I think it's always about Jerry Jones and the brand, selling that brand as best he can.
Jeffrey Chedia, NFL.com, joining us here. 105.7 The Fan. Bob Haney with you on this Turn It Up Tuesday. Now, the AFC West, it's Kansas City's domain. Has been for quite some time. I mean, they were winning when Alex Smith was the quarterback out there before Patrick Mahomes took over. But you have the Chargers, you have Denver, you have the Pete Carroll influx out there with the Raiders. And, you know, Geno Smith coming in, a proven veteran at quarterback. Is this the year maybe of recent vintage where their perch, the Chiefs, on top of the AFC West could be more precarious than it's been in, say, some of the previous few seasons?
Oh, it certainly feels that way, and would not be surprising to see that streak of division, straight division championships ending, because one of the biggest advantages they've always had is just the coaching has been so much better than what you've seen from other teams in the AFC West. And since Mahomes and Andy Reid got together, I think there's been like 17 coaches total amongst the other franchises in that 7-year period. And so when you have coaches coming in like Pete Carroll and Sean Payton, who won Super Bowls, and you have Jim Harbaugh, who's taken his team to a Super Bowl and won a national championship, that changes the dynamic immensely. And I do believe that it's not going to be a situation like you had last year where the Chiefs won 5 out of 6 division games, and then the only one they lost, they basically didn't play any starters, that it's going to be more of a fight. The Raiders will be more competitive. Denver has an elite defense, and Jim Harbaugh knows how to win games. And so, yeah, I do think that all these teams are going to give the Chiefs a much tougher fight this season.
All right, Jeffrey, last thing for you. Speaking of Patrick Mahomes, I was watching one of the many TV shows devoted to football, and they were doing a top 5 best arms in the NFL. And Patrick Mahomes wasn't on the list, which 3 years ago, 2 years ago, would have been unfathomable to me. So I know the explosive plays haven't been there as the offense and the personnel's kind of changed. But, I mean, you follow the Chiefs on a daily basis. I'm assuming Patrick Mahomes, the arm strength, is still where it was when he started stacking these most valuable players. And I'm guessing someone's telling him maybe that he's not as highly regarded in that area as he used to be. Could we maybe see Patrick Mahomes breaking out that howitzer a little bit more than we have the last couple of years?
Well, they want to break it out. I can tell you that. They've been trying for the last couple of years to get back to being an explosive offense. The last couple of years, they've been 15th both years in yards. And last year, they were 16th in points. And they're always talking about trying to get that deep passing game going. But as you know, you got to have a great supporting cast to make that happen. And they've had offensive line issues. They've had injuries at receiver and inconsistency. And so really – Yeah, I agree. His arm strength hasn't changed. His ability to throw the football hasn't changed, but the supporting cast is different. And really for him and that offense to be at a high level, you know, they're going to have Rashee Rice, who's facing a suspension and coming off injury, play well. Xavier Worthy's got to up his game. Travis Kelce's got to show he's got more in the tank. And so, you know, they're going to try everything possible. But I know that that's, you know, one of the biggest goals they've had is to try to make sure they're throwing the ball downfield more this season.
Jeffrey Chedia, NFL.com. Jeffrey, always appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of your Turn It Up Tuesday. We'll catch up with you soon.
Sounds good, man. Take care.
You got it. Here's Jeffrey, everybody. We'll come back, take a trip through the fun house for the first time today with Nolan McGraw, and then Inside Access takes over at 2, followed by BBT here on 105.7 The Fan. Heading into the offseason, a big one at that for Mike Elias. Missed this news. Grayson Rodriguez, done for the year, getting bone chips removed from the elbow. Should be healthy enough to start spring training in 26, but as we've talked about throughout the course of the show, act like he's not even here. Build your team next year, Mike Elias, as though you can't count on Grayson Rodriguez to do anything. And I don't think that's an egregious mistake if, in fact, that's how he chooses to do things. We creep closer and closer to the start of college football, so... I mean, we're here, man. Still summertime, still 80 degrees plus outside, but we can see old football season coming around the bend. Ravens open their preseason on Thursday night against the Colts. Got the Little League World Series going on. No, it's just, it just keeps, time keeps on ticking, ticking, ticking into the future and stuff.
A couple notes to clean up on the day. This is from Jeff Cerebeck. Kyle Hamilton apparently not on the practice field today.
Uh-oh.
I remember yesterday, well, you were out there. He was out there to start, then left, appeared to have a bit of a groin issue.
And never came back.
Didn't come back, but people didn't really think anything of it because a lot of vets were down yesterday and Lamar wasn't even there. So you kind of chalked it up to just a light day, but... not there today. That's a bit of a surprise.
Right, and I hope there's nothing more to it. Those groins can be a little pesky for sure, and he's definitely not going to play Thursday against Indianapolis. I guess we'll just wait. Speaking of time, let the next couple of days play out. You know, John Harbaugh would rather give you a Social Security number than talk about injuries, so we'll get some intel later, I'm sure.
And one note on the Orioles, new name getting added to the bullpen here. It's actually a returning guy. Orioles claiming right-hander Rico Garcia off waivers. It was DFA'd by the Mets. Now with them, maybe a little surprised to see him DFA'd by the Mets, considering he had a 2.13 ERA with them. But it looks like he was kind of a stopgap option, only through 12 and two-thirds innings with them. Was with the Orioles previously in 2022. Only threw 8 innings for them that year.
Rico Garcia?
Rico Garcia.
Gets me thinking about the 79-80 Orioles and Kiko Garcia.
Well, don't get too excited. Career ERA of 6.18.
Which probably Kiko Garcia could accumulate even to this day. All right, Nolan, let's get to the fun house.
Quick Draw's Fun House.
Sponsored by the Smile Design Center. Changing the way you feel about dentistry one smile at a time. For information or to schedule an appointment for care, visit them today at smiledesigndoctor.com.
105.7 The Fan.
Cooper in Ocean City here says that he'd bet good money on the Orioles giving the qualifying offer to Zach Eflin. Orioles and Elias, they need the arm. And if he walks, you get that coveted draft pick that Mike Elias loves so much. It's a win-win as far as he sees.
Yeah, and as far as Zach Eflin's concerned. I mean, we're guessing he'll be back at some point. He the back went up before the trade deadline last week, which took him off the shelf, even though the reports were he was still available. Teams weren't biting. Last year, the qualifying offer for a starting pitcher was $21.5 million, somewhere in that neighborhood. So he'll get a hefty pay raise, but as Cooper said, you know, he accepts it, and he's healthy. You have a guy that could definitely fit into the middle of your rotation, maybe not the upper half. If he declines, then you get a draft pick. The old competitive balance pick, as they said.
All right. Well, I'm starting to wonder what his market's going to be in general, that if other teams are going to be rushing to pay him more than $20 million a year, roughly in that ballpark. When you start thinking about some of the other names that are available on the market, it's pretty thin. So that would suggest that he'll get more money than he deserves, but I'm not quite sure with the injuries.
I would be flabbergasted if he signs a contract for multi-years with an annual value over $21, $22 million. All right, what? $3 at $60 million. I mean, it's not over, but it's in the ballpark, no pun intended. I mean, teams have done crazier things before. It won't be the Orioles.
Yeah. No, I mean, I guess, so what's his average that he's on now was around $13.3 million?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you're probably right. That'd be a pretty big jump, yeah. Especially after the injury.
He'll take that guaranteed cake, I'm guessing.
Let's see. This texter here says, how do you think the Orioles will handle playing time with Mountcastle coming back, whenever that ends up being? Mayo already here, and then the eventual call-up of Basayo. I'm assuming between the three of them and Adley, one of them's going to have to DH every day. Seems like they're extending Mountcastle's time in the minors because of this situation.
Well, I don't care how they figure it out. Get him at bats. I mean, we know Mountcastle has turned himself into a Gold Glove finalist dude at the first base bag, two-time Gold Glove finalist. But what you want from him is he comes in and proves he can hit home runs again. I mean, oh, that Baltimore killed him. He wasn't hitting home runs on the road. He's got three homers since the All-Star break last year and multiple stints on the IL. You just want to see him establish or reestablish any sort of trade value and then look ahead to next year maybe with Mayo and Basayo being your first place base platoon. But give them all fair at-bats. What else do you have to lose?
Drew in Bel Air says he appreciates the optimism for next year's Orioles from you, Bob, but he's disagreeing. Barring a miracle, just don't see that happening. You need at least two starters, an entire overhaul of the bullpen. On your roster now, the best you have is a fourth outfielder. This team needs a ton of work. Just don't see it happening in 1 year's time.
Yeah, I'm going to pump the brakes a little bit. I did make that take, so I can't back off totally, because if it does happen, then I can pat myself on the back for being right for once. But yeah, that pitching staff needs to be rebooted in a big, big way. And another thumper in the middle of the lineup wouldn't be bad. What do you think Schwarber would do at Camden Yards 81 times?
Well, I don't think the Phillies are going to let him go at this point.
Yeah, well, that guy's, he's just mishmashing and doing all sorts of things. But yeah, Mike Elias, big offseason for you. And I'm not exactly telling people what they don't already know.
Last text of the day, this one says, three names I can pencil in for next year's rotation. Bradish, Rogers, Kramer. That's about it. It's not much, but it's a start. Guys like Povich will be around. Don't have them as part of my five. There's still essential depth, but can't go that far right now.
Yeah, they got to pull a trade. They're going to have to sign a free agent. I mean, Braxton Bragg just had Tommy John surgery, so cross him off your list for 2026, at least for now. And do not put Grayson Rodriguez in your top five. Don't even put him on the team. Just get better, get 100% healthy, and we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. That's going to do it for us. Inside Access coming up next, followed by Baltimore Baseball Tonight at 5:30. For Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw, and Bob Haney, stay safe, stay healthy. Talk to you in the morning. For now, class dismissed.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.